This episode of Film Sack is brought to you by Casper, an online retailer of premium mattresses for a fraction of the price, because everyone deserves a great night's sleep. Get $50 off any mattress purchase by visiting casper.com/filmsack and enter the code FILMSACK. Terms and conditions apply. Go to casper.com/terms for more.
Somewhere in this rugged mountain countryside, possibly above the snow line, shrouded in mist, the fugitive John Rambo is hiding. Units of the state police, along with local members of the National Guard, are now being mobilized. What still remains unexplained by local authorities is just how and where the former Green Beret came into possession of the weapons with which he allegedly killed one deputy sheriff and tried to kill six others. Only their skill training and police enforcement techniques saved their lives. And word now is that the fugitive will be in custody in a matter of hours.
Don't look at me! Look at the road! This is Film Sack. Oh, sure.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Film Sack. This is Film Sack, episode 269. We are mining the very depths of film entertainment for all mankind. And my name is Scott Johnson. Joining me today, Brian, when your first killer dog don't succeed, send in the only other one you have, Dunaway.
Right, while you're laying on the ground.
Oh, hi. You guys know what? You know what I'm sick of? I am so sick of getting on Netflix and getting trauma entertained because they did it to me again. Those guys over at Trauma. I'm sitting there, I'm watching 30 minutes of Hambo fist blood before I realized I had been duped yet again. But it was okay. You know, I watched it. It was Gulf War veteran drifter John Hambo wanders into a small Utah town in search of an old friend and Hambone team partner. Well, to his chagrin, his buddy died from too much Tang during the 80s. And, you know, it just kind of goes from there and it escalates. And, you know, I had trouble turning it off, but eventually I did. And so I saw most of Rambo, but it wasn't really as good as Fist Blood.
Fist Blood. John Hambo.
Fist Blood.
I really want that to be a thing. Is that a real thing?
It is. Trauma Entertainment, man.
Oh, it really is a thing. Oh, my gosh.
They get me every time.
Hambo Fist Blood. Fantastic. Also with us, Randy Dennehy is French for dick, Jordan.
Aloha, fellas. Excuse me just a second here. You ask me if I'm vagrant, and I choke on my reply. I'd rather keep it to myself, who I was tortured by. And who am I to punch you, or steal this motorbike? I'm only just beginning to launch my first strike.
You know, I really miss songs
and
that really had no chorus.
When we touch, my flashbacks are too much. And then Vietnam comes back like a flood.
Wow. Is there more?
I want to shoot you till you die.
Yeah.
Until Troutman makes me cry. I want to shoot you because you drew first blood.
Well done.
Wow, dude.
It's over, right?
Bravo, good sir.
I don't even know.
It's over now, right?
I don't even know what to say about that. The lyrics were pretty special.
You missed your calling.
Yeah. That was really good.
Apologies to Dan Hill.
I've been called to never do that again.
Dan Hill's the singer-songwriter of that song?
I think so, yeah.
All right. God, well, finally with us, Brian, he always breaks down and cries in the hardware store, Ibbot.
Oh, perfect.
This mission isn't over. Nothing is over. It wasn't over when Billy blew up in front of me, and there were pieces of Billy all over me. Billy's arm right there on the ground, and Billy's leg, pieces of Billy all over me. There was his ear and his right index finger, and there were three of his toes all in a cluster, and then one more of his toes over there, and then eyelashes, lots of eyelashes, and another toe.
That felt very improv for Stallone when he did that scene.
I think it was.
I think it might have been. It might have been. Yeah. I actually think it was some of his more decent acting in the film. Yeah. That part.
It was pretty much his only
dialogue.
Dialogue, yeah. It was pretty much quiet otherwise.
Well, I'm happy to
get someplace around here and get something to eat.
I'm happy to report that we're back to a Stallone movie. I feel like it's been a little while, even though we've done nearly all of them.
Haven't done any Rambos until now.
I know. That in its own right is a little bit shocking. That we've never touched a Rambo film. And I like that we started with the first
never
one.
Never touched a Rambo.
And there's three on Netflix, and arguably the fourth, which is just called Rambo, which is the bloody, more modern 2008 one. I can't find that anywhere. I mean, I can rent it, I guess. But
Really? Was that not on?
It's not streaming.
It's not on Netflix.
No, I wish it was, because I really liked it a lot. I thought that was, if I'm picking a favorite, it's my favorite, I think.
I like his reboots. Right now in the theater, Creed is out, which is Apollo Creed from Rocky. It's his son.
Yeah.
And so he's back in the headlines.
Yeah, Michael B. Jordan in there, kicking it, rocking it. And everyone talks about, I haven't seen it yet, but everyone keeps saying that Stallone's killing it with the acting. Like, it's one of his best things.
Very cool.
I think he's as good as in the 21st century as he was in the 70s in terms of like writing and understanding what he's doing. And there's this big long middle where Stallone just kind of stunk.
Mm-hmm.
This, I would call this first Rambo movie the second best, with the fourth one, the last one concludes it and is a really good film. And I would say this is the second best. I was surprised going back and watching this movie, how seriously he seems to have taken the character and, you know, mistreating the character and the story, you know, like it's not, if you've never seen it, it's not about what you think it's about.
Here's what I came away with. I have not seen any of the Rambos for a very long time outside of the new one. And so I thought, well, my memory of them is very different. My memory of the first one was that it was a lot of talking to Colonel What's-His-Bucket, Richard Crenna. And it was super boring, and it was nothing like the second one, which seemed like the cool one when I was a kid. When I was a kid, 2 was where your heart was at, because 2 had like exploding arrows, and like he had to go back to Vietnam, and he had the nice tight close-up of him tying the thing to his head and looking all muscly and stuff. And what I've realized is, like Empire Strikes Back, or like, well, unless you're talking to Randy, but like... what's another a good example of this? Even the Rocky movies. I thought Rocky 3 was the ultimate Rocky movie when I saw it when I was young. I thought the other first two were boring, and I guarantee if I was young, I would have thought Rocky Balboa or even this Creed thing were also lame, because when they were catering to my taste at the time, which was big, bombastic, loud, take it to the 10th level, crank it up to 11 kind of ideas, right? And this movie is a much quieter, smaller thing than 2 was, or certainly 3. I mean, good Lord, 3. 3 is garbage, is my recollection. But 3 is like Rocky 4, you know? Like, it seemed rad when you were there, but it's not. 1, I guess what I'm trying to get around to, let me boil it down to what I'm trying to say. I really liked this, like, a lot. And it's over the top, and the acting's ridiculous, and it's like the Shatner school of acting on everybody and all that kind of stuff. But I really liked it, and way more than I remember liking it. I remember as a kid thinking, well, that one was dumb. I'm sure glad there's a 2 out, you know?
Right. All right. I'm going to, you kind of got to expect that at some point this is coming again. Hmm. So I'm going to be playing the same old song, but this is the first Rambo movie I've ever seen.
Oh my God. That's a good thing. No, I'm so glad for you.
Yeah.
I'm glad that you might have expectations. You might have memories of what other people told you. Mm-hmm. It was about.
Well, and I've seen scenes, of course, you know, like everything else. It's not like it was a complete and total, I don't even know what a Rambo is. Is that the name of a dog? Is it
but
a
like
computer?
Your whole life, you've seen images of Sylvester Stallone wearing a garland of ammunition.
Right.
And then you start watching this movie, and oh man, he's young. He's wearing a jacket. He speaks clearly to a woman out on a farm.
Yeah. Right. None of that, well, like, hey, Adrian.
Somewhat clear.
So let me ask you again, because he was a friend of mine. Of a picture. See, the note. Here's a note. He wrote his handwriting right here.
Yeah. That's interesting, because the parody that came from Rambo was pretty rampant.
More than Rocky. And I saw the parody, right? I saw the, the Charlie Sheen thing.
Charlie Sheen, yeah. What was that action? It was basically this action movie.
No,
was
Hot, it Hot Shots? Hot Shots Part Deux.
Part Deux? Yeah, I think it was Part Deux.
Yeah, Charlie, Emilio Estevez was the character that was like Rambo in that, I think, right?
I thought it was Charlie Sheen, because I thought I remember seeing Charlie Sheen with the headband. Too.
Yeah, because it was. Yeah, that's what it was. So if you look at it, it's a Hot Shots, and he's shooting the chicken from the...
it's definitely Charlie Sheen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's definitely Charlie Sheen, and he's... I love the cover box, but he's dressed up in right. Rambo Part 3 or Rambo Part 2 kind of garb, and he's shooting a chicken from his... as an arrow. So yeah, that was definitely,
I forgot Sheen was even in that. I got the brothers mixed up.
But you know, Estevez was in Loaded Weapon. That was his parody.
That's
franchise.
What I'm thinking of. Loaded Weapon. And it was like Lethal Weapon. Okay. And he was like the Mel Gibson style.
So you know, I gotta say, first Rambo viewing, first official Rambo viewing, and I'm hoping that we do the other movies for FilmSec, because I kind of want to watch them now.
They're fun, right? There's a Renegade in the Mountains picking off crappy dudes one by one quality to it that I really adhere to.
Not just a quality, but that's really it. That's
I wish that as a group we could somehow summarize 2 and 3, like watch a short film that gives you 2 and 3 in 15 minutes and then watch the fourth one, the final one. Because that's like I say, 2 and 3 are lost in that time frame when Sylvester Stallone came along, not Sylvester, obviously, Arnold Schwarzenegger came along and made a bunch of movies in a really specific genre that did well. And Stallone just kind of followed that lead, you know? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, for sure. I think two probably holds up a little bit better, but 3 really is bad. Like, 3 is just bad. 4 is really cool, and I would like to see 4 together. I don't know how we do it. I don't know the best way to get around to it.
It'll eventually be on streaming, yeah.
Yeah.
It's outrageous to think about. After you've watched this first movie, it is just absolutely outrageous to think, in the very next movie, they're sending him back to Vietnam. Like, what?
Yeah, it's a little
Why would
top.
They do that?
It's over That's the really top.
I remember it was such, but it was such a great idea at the time, because we were coming off this first one, and I didn't catch this at the theater, but it had a huge push on the the cable channels, and by the time it got to cable and I was exposed to it, I got super excited by the idea of, oh, he's going to Vietnam. So we're going to actually see our superhero in his native element. Mm-hmm. And I remember being pretty excited about that.
I was too. And I remember liking it. I walked out of there. And by the way, these were movies I was not supposed to be allowed to see. This Rambo was on that list of you can't see these. And I would sneak out with friends, because that's how it goes when your kids are told they can't do something that makes them more interested in doing it. Just a little parenting tip, everybody.
Don't tell me what I can't do.
Yeah, here's what you do instead. I have a little parenting. Ready? Parenting tip with Scott Johnson. Here's our theme for that. Ready?
That's what she said.
Here it is. Here's my here's my parenting tip. Take him with you. Go see it with your kid. That's fine. Mm-hmm. Even if there's some awfully uncomfortable sexy scene with, boobies, at least you're the one there. And it makes a difference. Anyway, here's the point. Scott Fletcher has the point. Let's let him have the point.
Rambo First Blood. Back on his home turf, a Vietnam vet is a one-man army. The cops don't know who they're messing with. There's my dog jangling her collar.
Dog, hey, knock it off. I'm trying to work.
That's it.
I thought he was going to do a dog tags gag. Nope. I really did.
No, he could have, but he chose not to, and that was fantastic. Don't never change, Scott Fletcher. You're truly a national treasure. Anyway, so let's...
but not like that other guy that does National Treasure.
No, not that guy. He's not a national treasure. Let's talk about it. Let's dive deep. This is directed by Ted Kotcheff. Kotcheff? I don't know.
Kotcheff. I like Ted Kotcheff.
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 It's Kotcheff, is it?
Kotcheff.
Written by David Morrell, who wrote the novel, Michael Kozol, who wrote the screenplay, and then Sylvester Stallone did like 7 rewrites of the screenplay. Apparently this thing was like 3 hours long in its first running, and he hated it. And
I read the novel when I was a teenager, and it's not really, this is a distant rewrite. This is not
it's very pale.
Well, wait, what's the difference between the novel and this, like,
so,
just generally?
So in the novel, The people that he's basically fighting back at home were also veterans, mm-hmm. and they had a very different take on the war, and there was kind of a Korean veterans versus Vietnam veterans vibe to it.
Ah, so that explains. So there's a piece before you go on. There's a scene where Brian Dennehy goes back to his office in the police mm-hmm. station, sits down, and behind him are all his medals from the Korean War.
Yeah,
and they they downplayed that, though. They never really brought that up, other than showing that, I guess.
I mean, I don't want to jump the gun too much, but the best scene in the film, sorry, the best scene in the film is a brief chat between Brian Dennehy and Richard Crenna, and that felt like the most like the book to me, where they're basically arguing. One is like, one is saying, well, you know, back here on the home front, we have to keep law and order, and you jerks go over 1,000 miles away and send people back to us that are broken, you know, and it's your fault, blah, blah, blah. And then the person on the other side is like, we have to make them monsters or we won't win wars and we won't have a home front.
Right.
And so like that sort of argument is more what the book's about. And the movie is a lot more about the monster himself and how he reacts and how he has PTSD and how we shouldn't have sent him over to do these things.
And they in the book, they also explore the idea that he's broken. He can never fit back into society. Stallone is a brilliant screenwriter, and he understands what people, he understands what the masses like in a character and how to sell that character and how to make that character likable, even if they're really kind of a dick. Because in the book, John Rambo is, you know, he's just killing people and he's a monster in the movie.
Like I want to ask,
he plays it different.
Yeah.
I want to ask Brian Ibbett, did you recognize in the very beginning when he gets to town and mm-hmm. Brian Dennehy picks him up? Did mm-hmm. you recognize that if he had just said, hey, I'm a highly decorated war veteran, I came to find a friend, he's dead
totally.
Apparently. If he had just spoken, like, did that come through to you? That, like, why is this guy keeping his mouth shut?
Exactly.
Everything's fine if he just talks to this guy.
Yeah. If he would have just, instead of, because it basically was one of these things where, it's like two cats that, you know, would just be friends, but they meet in this alley and one of them arches his back like, oh, you're arching your back. You're threatening me. Oh, I can threaten you too. And it's like, just it goes up.
Escalates from there. That's totally true. I kept, it's so funny you brought that up, because I kept thinking this throughout the whole entire movie. There were so many junctures of very easy to fix this.
Yeah. If they just would have, if Rambo just would have said, oh, sorry, I just came into town because I was looking for a friend of mine and I'm on my way. But then he's like all shifty. I'm going north. I'm going to Portland. Well, wait, Portland's south. Right. What's the matter with you?
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Like, I'm confused. I'm a Vietnam War vet.
It kept just getting confused. And I understand what they were trying to do to us. They were trying to say, well, look, he went and talked to that lady whose husband is now dead from cancer, and now he's so downtrodden. It was the last connection he had to this group of people, right? Because everyone else died. And so they were trying to say, well, that's enough to make him this despondent, hard to answer, you know, slow to answer, whatever guy that's going to get treated badly by Dennehy. But I just don't think that's enough. I think he should have said it's something. Yes. Just
right. Exactly.
And this is a trope, and I'm not, well, I don't know if it's a trope, but it's definitely a story element that I've seen a lot of other places. And maybe Randy has a name for what this is.
I'll give a half a trope sound. Here you go. Here's half trope. There.
It's when the hero is actually a lot more than he presents himself to, and therefore the people around him treat him one way. But if they just knew, and they eventually find out that he is like a superhero, or you know, he's decorated, he's a hero. So what is that kind of a, I know it's a trope, but is there like a term for that?
I'm trying to think of it, because I can see it in many. There's a scene in this movie where Troutman has shown up, and he basically just says, you know, this is he's standing off to the side. Actually, some other guy, some like state policeman or whatever, that we looked him up and we found out he's a Green Beret and he won the Congressional Medal of Honor.
Oh, it was on the radio when they're down by the river still. So he was
down by the river.
And that was like, that felt to me like so many other movies.
Yeah. There's like, you're dead on, Brian. There's like a thing, and I don't know what you call that thing.
It's like the chip on the shoulder.
Well, no, there's a bunch of tropes there, right? There's the soul survivor trope.
Yeah. Right.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Right.
There, you know,
or finding out that. Go ahead.
Maybe it's the human condition. You don't understand me. You don't know me. If you only knew me, then you would realize that I'm this.
Why should I have to take the effort to tell you who I am when you should just respect me automatically based, you know?
Right. Yeah. Basic human decency.
Basic human, right, exactly.
Sure. I guess that's the thing.
Does Dennehy like just patrol the borders of town and, oh, there's a stray dog walking into town. I'm going to shoot it.
Right. I love him because our first introduction to Dennehy's character is when he, Teasel, when he comes out of the police station and he stands on the steps and he points at people and has this interaction and then he belches, you know. Yeah. he's belching like he's been inside eating something. I don't know. Is he the king of the town?
It did feel like the governor in Walking Dead or something. Here's his very first line, not his very first line, but one of his first lines, which sets him up to be the dick that he is. Check it out.
Morning, Dave.
Hi, Sheriff.
Gonna take a bath this week?
he is very concerned like about people's hygiene.
Yeah,
he really is.
Yeah, which is weird. I like Dennehy a lot, and I like it when he's a bad guy, which is pretty much almost in everything he ever did.
Yeah.
But if you haven't ever seen Silverado, and I know some people haven't, he's fantastic in Silverado.
He was FX, right? He was the dude with the other Brian.
Yes, the two Brians. Australian Brian, I think, and then him.
You know who comes to mind, Brian, now that I think about it? Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Mm.
Like, if he had
just said
to Luke Skywalker up front, oh, wow, I have some things to tell you. You know what I mean?
Right, right.
And by the way, I am a big damn hero.
Yeah.
I'm not some old dude out in the desert. I'm a big damn hero. We need to hurry back to your aunt and uncle's house right now.
Yeah.
You know, like,
they did it again with Yoda. They do it with Yoda again with Luke, where Yoda pretends to be this weird swamp creature that doesn't know anything and just wants to curiously look through all his trash. Mm-hmm. He's a mice, just, you know, exactly. Stinky hole.
Grover's down in the,
this swamp my home this is, or whatever the line goes.
Why don't I escort you out of Dagobah just so you can get on the way of wherever you're going?
Yeah. Going you are.
This is my favorite diner you seek? Yes. 30 miles up the road. I'll drive you. I will.
This is a thing in movies, actually. We're more entertained when we don't know just how great somebody is for a while.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
It must just be the natural thing to write. Like, because now that you're saying it and the way we're describing it, and I'm starting to see how pervasive it is. It's in everything, really. Like, everybody's kind of got a moment of, I don't know. Is it hyper realizing that moment of you don't know me, I don't know you, but movies just crank it up.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah,
so
because, I mean, it's a very easy way to create conflict between two characters. Mm-hmm. If people were as nice in movies, as they can be in real life, I say can be, then movies would be like 5 minutes long. It'd be like, you're my father? Okay, well, I guess maybe we can get along. I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe we can work something
maybe
out.
Maybe we can.
By the way, you're reminding me of my meta trope that all tropes can be found in Star Wars.
Yeah. Yeah.
They can. All tropes can be. Totally, like, for instance, one of the biggest tropes I wrote down about this movie is the trope of disproportionate retribution, right? This movie is based on disproportionate retribution. And Star Wars, I could go right to it. Man, they blew up Alderaan.
Yeah.
You try to drive me out of town, I will, I'll kill all of you.
No, that's true. Now that you mentioned that, I think that every trope ever made exists in at least one of the Star Wars films.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. That's unsettling a little bit now that I think about it. All right. So let's talk about some of the stuff that happened in and around this thing. That rotten canvas that Rambo found and started cutting and made a coat out of it.
You know, that was the first time I was introduced to the idea of a pure survivalist.
Yeah,
was Rambo.
Yeah.
And cutting that tarp out was so, first I'm like, well, good thing that's not your job, because you kind of suck at it.
Yeah, you're not really great at it. You're not really a tarp, tarpsman, or whatever they'd be called.
A tarpsman.
But he, the cool thing about that, I guess, is that the film crew found that nasty thing up in the hills they were filming in, and it wasn't a prop. So they just used it. They're like, here's this burlap piece of shit. Tear it up and put it over your back there, Rambo. And he did. But you always hear these stories about Stallone being willing to get hurt, have his ribs broken.
Sure.
I feel like he's, you know, it's easy to cartoon him off, you know. It's easy to look at him and go, oh, man, what a goofball. But in the end of the day, I feel like that dude maybe gave more for his craft than we give him credit for sometimes.
The great Michael Westmore worked on this film, and you hear that name and you're like, what did he have to do in this movie? Well, they're the best special effect in the whole film is a scene where Rambo's been – what turns him into a monster in the woods is he gets shot, but it's just – he gets grazed, basically.
Wait, and, that was confusing.
Yeah.
Right. And so – yeah, so he decides to do surgery on his own arm, and it looks freaking real.
Yeah, it's gross.
I really thought, what if Sylvester Stallone just cut himself? Just,
he might
make this look good.
Just do this thing. Well, this is when he was first. I mean, he was big and rocky in terms of his, you know, physique, but he wasn't like this. Like, this is a new level for Stallone where he really ripped out. And that got even more so as more movies came out. But when he sat down and he started working on it, just imagine the space. And I mean, people are watching the movie, so they've already seen this. But the space between his tricep and bicep, imagine what that would feel like if it was just cut deep enough to be gushing blood every heartbeat.
Yeah. Right.
It looked really good.
It really did look good. Yeah, Michael Westmore, and we'll talk about him later, I'm sure. But that guy's amazing. And he's the guy that always shows up to kind of coach the contestants on Face Off.
Well, yeah. His daughter is the host of the.
I didn't know that. I've not seen that show. I didn't know he was in there.
Yeah, she's a special effect in and of herself. But the but you see this guy, you know, you see Michael Westmore coming on and talking to these contestants. You think, oh, it's just this old guy who's been in the business for a while. But then you see like his body of work and all of these things he's done. You're like, God, this guy is a genius. And that looked, yeah, you're right, exactly. Looks so real, like the occasional kind of blork of blood coming out as he's trying to sew it shut.
Yeah, that was really impressive. Yeah. I still don't quite know how he did it. You know how
prosthetic,
we got
a prosthetic overpiece.
Well, clearly,
but it's so well done.
It looked like his skin. It didn't look like something had been glued onto his arm.
Yeah, I've seen those before in movies.
Y'all should have seen the Trauma Entertainment Hambone because that was just basically.
You really want us to watch? That,
I
want to
watch this Hambone. I do.
Right,
I'd watch it.
But
it sounds like garbage.
The star of everything that happens with Rambo out in the woods to me is his Rambo knife. Did you guys have a Rambo knife?
No, I wanted one. I had a plastic one.
I had a real. We all had. Well, you know, we live in the South, but we all had real ones. We got them. We all got everybody on our road that we lived on got one of those after this movie came out, and we all had our Rambo knives with a little with the compass on the end, and if you open it up and you pour the stuff out, you had matches that could get wet and it would still work, and you had little stuff that you could sew yourself up with, but I would never do that.
They were huge, for decades, if you saw a movie or anything with a big giant knife like that, you would call it a Rambo knife.
Yeah.
It became the Rambo knife. I don't think there is even, and there may be another name for it now, and probably some knife makers hate the term Rambo knife, but that's what it is, damn it. It's a Rambo knife.
What do you hunt with one of those?
wild Denny.
Over and over in
whatever you want.
He actually said you hunt the enemy, which I just thought was, that's just not a good enough answer.
Is that like, what he said? Because I turned on subtitles. I turn on subtitles, and it said,
"Whatever you want,"
and that's what I saw. So
really,
it was funny.
So
that was in one scene. They might have talked about it another.
It was when
time
they were
too,
like frisking him at the station, right?
Yep. When Brian Hendy first found the pulled it out of Stallone's butt crack, it didn't go ooh gross. But when he first pulled it out, he said, "Is something? What is this for?" And he says, "Then he asked him further." So that's what he said. He said,
"So you have this? You have collector's edition DVDs of this thing, right? Or Blu-rays or something?"
Just the DVD.
DVD. Okay.
Really, there's nothing really special about it.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you, because according to lore and history here, the original cut was 3.5 hours. Stallone panicked and thought it was terrible. According to him, it made him and his agent sick. I don't know what that means. They're both Ralphing or what. But they didn't like it at all, and they thought it was gonna kill his career, unlike Rhinestone. Anyway, so he begged them, forced them, whatever, to maybe at Rambo knife point, I don't know, to change the movie. They cut it down to 93 minutes, and arguably this thing saved his career rather than being this, you know, bomb.
Yeah.
And that it was really, since Rocky, the first movie he made that wasn't a total bomb. Everything he'd done in between, garbage. Just garbage.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And then this thing comes out, and it was like, not only career-saving, you could argue this accelerated his career in a way that, you know, he needed real bad. But I guess what I'm saying is, does your DVD have a bunch of that extra stuff, or is it just straight up, here's the movie?
Not mine. I was hoping it would, and then I popped it in. It's like, oh, this is just a typical movie. I mean, it's not, I don't even think the runtime was even much off from what Netflix was. I watched deleted scenes on YouTube because they had tried a couple of different. This movie got screened and adjusted. Stallone's really good about this. You know, he's really good about kind of getting involved, and if things look like they're not pleasing to the audience.
I wish he was better about it with the Expendables films. I wish he was a little bit better about those. You know, like spend a little more time brushing those up. Maybe that's hard because you got every action hero ever, and the smell of ego is overwhelming, and you just can't do anything with it. I don't know, but yeah, when it's smaller personal projects or ones he has control over, and it isn't full of other people like him, that seems to be where he does his best work.
Right. So, and you know, First Blood, you may not realize it, but in '82, we were just then getting comfortable with the idea of discussing Vietnam vets, because it really was a really long time before our country healed in a way that we actually started accepting Vietnam vets. And it was about during this time.
Yeah. Well,
and you could see why in the subsequent movies he took Rambo back to Southeast Asia, because if you were watching TV in the 80s, you were seeing TV shows like China Beach.
Mm-hmm.
And there was an interest in it from an entertainment viewer's perspective.
Mm-hmm.
And so I kind of think that it's also the series that killed Sylvester Stallone's career, because by the time he gets to the end of the third Rambo film, you're like, he's a caricature. He's a joke. He's an actor who can't act. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Right. Was it also because of his sequelitis? I mean, he was really the first person that I remember going, okay, I'm going to do another Rocky. And we're doing another Rambo.
You have to give Schwarzenegger credit for not catching that disease.
Well,
Schwarzenegger made some sequels, but he didn't make four, you know, True Lies movies.
That's a good point. Yeah, you don't see him doing. But he also was more like a collaborator with filmmakers and creators, and not so much like an entrepreneur the way that Stallone was. So Stallone, you know, for all of his good, I think he probably lost his way, or thought that way maybe was better than it turns out to be in retrospect. But his sequelitis was pretty. He had a severe case, no question about it.
It was bad.
But this Vietnam thing from the '80s, though, let's talk about that for a second. So, like, what was the peak of that? Like Platoon, like Full Metal Jacket. Like, what do you guys think was like the?
I would say.
I feel like it peaked, and we haven't done jack shit since then. It feels like, really.
Right.
Like, did the 90s have big Vietnam?
Well, the 90s started with a new war in a new part of the world for the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And, so suddenly Vietnam just started to seem like no longer. It had been fully explored.
Hmm. Right. Plus, we're not really.
Three Kings and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah. Three Kings was awesome.
Right. That was later in the 90s. I mean, when you're at war, it's tougher to make a war movie.
Yeah.
I mean, people just don't want to see it.
Mm.
That's still my favorite Ice Cube role, by the way. I love that movie. Three Kings.
Oh yeah, the Three Kings.
Yeah, it's really good. Some good.
That was
Clooney.
That was him and Marky Mark
Clooney.
And who else was that?
Clooney.
It was George Clooney. Yeah. And who the director on that was somebody like
a big deal dude now.
Yeah, it's like somebody who's doing bigger stuff now, and it is David O. Russell.
David O. Russell. Yeah, who's
Hustle.
Oscar man every year now.
Mm-hmm. American Hustle.
It'd be great if Ice-T was his Jennifer Lawrence and was in every movie he makes.
This is a romantic comedy with Bradley Cooper and Ice-T.
So how do you guys feel about the idea that Kris Kristofferson was almost Rambo, Gene Hackman was almost Sheriff Teasel?
I've been trying really hard. Okay, so Brian Dennehy's character is kind of interchangeable. He does a good job, but he's kind of interchangeable.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even know what to think of David Caruso's character. Like,
Deputy Ginger? I love him.
Yeah,
he was awesome.
They didn't use that character properly. I hope that some of what was cut expanded on his sort of role in all these things.
He's the chick in the bucket, you guys. Got hurt, and then that was it. No more Mitch for the rest of the movie.
Yeah, and you're feeling like he's going to be the voice of reason, because he is at the time. He's like, oh, why are you guys picking on this poor guy? He probably just wants to be left alone. Gosh.
Yeah.
I'm going to show my butt on a TV show in 12 years.
This movie has the truest chick in a bucket, which is also a combined with the trope of the only woman in the world movie trope, which is the woman at the very beginning of the movie. There's no other woman ever.
Oh, that's right. She is the only woman. So later I bring this up in the show, but I was trying to think of a single female. I couldn't think of one.
Mm-hmm.
But I forgot about the lady whose husband died, and she's there for five seconds.
If you read about what was cut, there was apparently a cut scene where he is put on display in Vietnam, in the war, and he interacts with a Vietnamese woman.
Yeah.
And I was like, man, I'm kind of sad they cut that.
Like, I am too, because it's a town. Otherwise, it's this northwestern town full of white men.
Oh, and speaking of,
I wish a woman police officer.
I wish this movie was longer, because it was filmed all within a few miles of where my son was born, and I love that part of the country of Canada. It's a town called Pitt Meadows and a recreational area called Golden Ears, and it was amazing. I can't tell you how often
that mountain stuff's beautiful.
It's my favorite
James Bond movie. It's gorgeous up there.
Golden Ears.
Him walking around the corner of that cliff. Walking around in that opening scenes. I mean, that's so iconic. You can't see that and not just feel nostalgia.
Yeah, it's good. It's good. It's a good movie. It's not a piece of crap. It holds together.
I think the eventuality of the Rambo series really jaded me to what the first one was, until I went back and watched it this last time. And I'm like, this was actually a really important movie, especially as far as how we do action movies. That came later on. I saw so many things this movie that I didn't realize. And oh, by the way, the trope that I had mentioned, I think just last week in Badasses, there was a trope again. It was a huge trope, and that's the gunner on the helicopter will fall to his death.
That is
You're right. He totally did. I was so happy to see that guy go. I hated
that
guy.
Yeah, so I thought I'd heard that John Galt was like a fairly consistent presence in these movies. I thought that was like it's Rambo.
So you were really surprised when he took a face plant.
I was completely surprised. I'm like, wow, how does he come back from this?
Yeah.
His blood is all splattered all over that rock.
Right.
I love that guy as an actor, but I hate his characters, man.
Oh, he was such a jerk. He was in so much good stuff from the 80s, though.
What's his name, John?
Jack Starrett?
Starrett.
Oh,
there it is.
Yeah, that's his real name, but it was Galt in the movie.
Yeah,
it was
Galt.
Weird.
Okay.
Yeah.
No, Galt. Galt. It was Galt.
It is Galt. Okay.
Is it Galt? I'm sorry.
This movie is absolutely filled with Sylvester Stallone's politics.
Yeah.
It is overrun with it. And like, that's just a little reference to Ayn Rand that he's got in there. But like, he throughout this film, I just couldn't get over how strongly anti-war, anti-Vietnam, anti-military. You know, Sylvester Stallone is. It comes through in every little thing.
Yeah, it's for sure. I got that feeling too. One thing I didn't expect was to see the template for what would become things like Predator. Like Predator, yeah, it's an alien, and yeah, he's here hunting people, but this pick one guy off at a time, trying to figure out in your head who's going to go next kind of thing, is a really fun movie thing for me. I really like that in my action movies. And I didn't know that. I mean, this movie may have invented it, or at least predated a lot of the ones that I think of as more prominent.
Well, it sure does it quickly, right? You're thinking, all right, he's got like 5-6 people chasing after him and dogs. And usually when they do that trope of the guy hunting alone, trying to pick people off one by one, get them separated, it usually takes up like a good third of the film, or maybe half of the film.
Right.
But it's like,
not this one.
Oh, boom. Hey, that guy's getting hit there. Oh, this guy's out, and I get this guy strung up to a tree. Boom.
I mean, I guess it's not
how you like me now.
It's not new. Like Alien did it. Like the first Alien was all about that, right?
Right.
I don't know, whatever it is about that, it just appeals to me.
Yeah. Alien is in reverse, right? Because it's like you're taking the side of the people hunting the alien, and he's singly taking everybody out one by one.
It's flipped, exactly. It's a bit. It's like in Predators, same way, sort of. It's like you're who you're rooting for is different, but the concept is almost identical.
Right.
Who is your favorite takedown?
I just can't get over the dogs thing. Like Rambo shoots a bunch of dogs, and they're like, okay, we still got one dog left. Let's send that in. And then Rambo's tired of shooting dogs, apparently. And just kills the dog with his bare hands.
Yeah.
Right.
Saving my bullets.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I love it. My favorite death, though, my favorite was when I believe it was David Caruso's character,
Mitch,
Deputy Ginger, that got stabbed in the butt.
Well, he didn't die, though, right?
Yeah, it actually scared me because I was looking at the scene, and, you know, Rambo is camouflaged pretty well, and he's actually in the scene. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden he just moves and jumps up and stabs him in the butt. And you're like, what happened?
Yeah, it was a pretty good attack.
He was the guy who was on your side and you screwed up his coccyx.
Of all the people who, I mean, so I'll say my favorite attack by Rambo where there wasn't necessarily a death was the guy who got like four wooden stakes right through his crotch.
Stakes on painful. A stick.
Yeah, stakes on a stick. That
How is that better than killing somebody? Because that dude's he's done for life.
Yeah,
you know?
He's out, dude.
Mm.
He'll never
be able to look at a tree again.
Exactly. He can't see any wood.
That's gonna get me.
What's this table made out of? Wood. What?
Mexico.
Does anybody remember a moment in the film when they just felt like that is so out of place, wrong? I wish that wasn't in this movie.
There's a very quiet portion of the film where Rambo got off the mountain, jumped with the truck that was really cool, and then there was just a part where it got boring for about 10 minutes.
Oh, for me, it's the rats in the mine. I was just, what are we doing? Why is this in this movie?
Well, in the book, they're bats, right? And they went with rats probably because it's easier to show them, but rats don't behave that way. They don't just get up on your shoulder.
And attack you.
Yeah, they don't do that.
Well, they weren't attacking him. They were just piggyback riding. If you watch the scene, they're just like hanging out on his back, and all of a sudden he freaks out. And he's like, there's rats on me.
Yeah, this is like when those rats in Vietnam were crawling all over me and put me in a cage.
But I mean, it's one thing like in Indiana Jones to suddenly realize you got a bunch of tarantulas on your back, and you take your thing and wipe them off, and that's scary and creepy because these spiders have climbed up on you. But rats don't. They will stay away from these other creatures.
Right.
They will not go near you.
Exactly. Unless you're bringing the heat, which he did, because he made that. This is the thing that took me out of the movie the most was Rambo's insistence of just destroying everything. Even if it didn't need to be destroyed, he would pick up something. If it did not have usefulness, he wouldn't just drop it. He would throw it and it would just break it. So like he picked up the lanterns and I guess they were out of fuel. So instead of filling them full of fuel, which he found, he just threw them on the ground and bust them. And then he wrapped some of the tarp on a stick and then lit it. And I'm like, dude, just chill.
Tarp on a stick.
So angry.
Mm. Sticks on a stick and tarp on a stick.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's.
Oh, by the way, also speaking of meta stuff, I loved the cops' tiny raincoats for their hats. Those are always.
God, yeah. I love that. When you have a leather hat. It's a good idea to protect it from the rain.
Wait, what?
Speaking of leather, by the way, that sweet leather jacket. Leather jacket on Dennehy, man. I remember having one of those in the 80s.
Yeah, and Dennehy, I feel like Dennehy almost, if he's not in one of those, there's something wrong. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, there's something about that guy.
Should be the only thing he ever wears,
right? He is one of, I mean, as much as he may not have been mainstream, you know, big enough character actor to be noticeable and you recognize him and everything, but he is one of the most unique actors I can think of in terms of his look and the way he talks and moves and his size. Like, I don't know. I can't compare him to anybody else. Who else is like that guy? Nobody.
It's weird because you can both hate him and love him at the same time or kind of relate to him.
Sure. And he's Silverado, he is fantastic in Silverado. My gosh, he's good in that.
That's the hard thing. Like, we're talking about who could you replace with this character with. Like, Richard Crenna plays the trope of the badass long coat.
Yeah.
He really does it well. The moment he shows up, he classes up the whole movie. But you could replace him. There's a lot of people that could play that role. You just got to find a guy with a jar head who, you know, who's willing to squint while he talks. Like, it's not that big a deal.
It was almost Lee Marvin, by the way. That was almost him.
Yeah, that makes total sense to me. But I have a hard time imagining who could have played that sheriff role. That like other than Brian Dennehy at the time.
Yeah.
Like now I can think of somebody who's at, you know, who's 50 years old now, but at the time there's just nobody.
Gene Hackman
almost had
the role.
Archie Bunker could have played it.
But yeah, Archie Bunker, he could have actually. He's good. You ever see the
Heat of the Night?
Yeah, he's great in that.
Yep.
Yeah, that's a weird thing to see when you if you ever know him as is Archie Bunker.
Archie Bunker.
Yeah, do yourself a favor and like see him in something else because he was actually a really interesting actor. Was right. He's dead. He has to be dead.
I don't know if he is.
Did you guys hear? I know that's one of those people you say is he's dead.
And
you
he
say,
has the no, same birthday as me. I'm pretty sure though.
Did you guys hear Robert Loggia died yesterday?
Oh
no,
man. No, I didn't hear that.
We've had him on this show a few times. Well, not him, but his movies.
Yeah, he did. Carol O'Connor did die in 2001.
Oh, okay.
Been busy reading all of the eulogizing of Scott Weiland and.
Yeah,
and listening to Stone STP. Temple Pilots. I haven't listened to Stone Temple Pilots in a long time.
They're great,
right? Yeah.
Robert Loggia. Now,
fitting tribute, Johnson.
This is the singingest episode ever.
Yeah. Now, when you're replacing people in this story, you can't replace them with Italian Americans. Like one of the things that sets Rocky Rambo apart from everybody else is that he's Italian, and they did not really play that up in this movie.
No,
but you could imagine the sheriff yelling at him, you know, to get his wop ass out of town.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Someone isolate that audio and use it out of context, please. Right. I don't feel like that terminology has quite the sting it used to have. You could almost say that in public and people wouldn't quite even know what you're talking about. That's interesting how societal norms change.
Yeah.
So my favorite trivia period about this movie was something I had no idea about. In 1989, Sega made a game called Golden Axe. You're all familiar with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, love it.
It stole sound bites from the film.
Oh no.
What? Seriously?
Illegally stole?
Yes.
Them? Like,
well, I don't think they had rights to them. So the two most notable sounds were used were that of the character Deputy Sergeant Galt as he falls to his death. I have a clip of it later. From the helicopter, so that whatever he did, and that of the character Mitch after he is stabbed by Rambo in the leg in order to draw the other officers to his aid. Both those sound bites were used constantly through the game as you would kill people and hit them with axes and stuff. Yeah, isn't that great? That's great.
Did this end up going to court? Like I know the big music thing was Van Halen versus what's his name, the guy who sampled all their
the rapper
drums.
Sample guy.
Tone
Loc. Yeah.
Yeah.
But like, I wonder if
sampler guy.
I wonder if there had already been a. I wonder if there had already been like a films versus video games, you know, trial.
Yeah. Maybe I didn't see anything about a trial, but yeah, they were.
They probably didn't even care. I mean, that's. I think that the movie producers of First Blood. And just probably had no interest in video games. I thought it was even going anywhere, probably.
Probably thought it was a fad and didn't care. That's my guess. And I'm guessing this isn't the first time.
So. Yeah, it just seems like it would have been perfect for that. Jeez.
Yeah. Anyway, it's very interesting, I thought. So what else? Oh, yeah, check this out. Straight razors.
What? Why wouldn't you use a safety razor?
That's my question.
We all ought to be sitting there going, What?
Because they wanted to teach John Rambo a lesson.
I mean, they're more intimidating. They're more whatever. But if you're going to have it on hand, you either only have it there to intimidate or you don't know that regular razors are available.
The hardest time for me suspending my disbelief was him being processed in jail because they would have just gotten him a public defender and said, clean this guy up.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What? The cops wouldn't do that.
Yeah.
The cops don't do that.
Yeah. You know what I really wanted? I wanted Yakety Sax to be playing while he wouldn't give his thumbprint.
You know, that was the best acted scenes to me. It just when he wouldn't give his thumbprint and just that hard ass edge that he was giving and just constantly wiping his fingers off with the paper towels. He was so in the moment for that.
He wasn't interested. He wasn't having any, man. And that guy who's been in a million other things, who's trying to process him. Mm-hmm. Can't think of his name, but.
Yeah, another character.
He's
actor,
a super douche. Always
that
a douche.
After the rats in the mine, that was my second stupidest thing. You don't process a guy like that at all. Never. Not 40 years ago, not 100 years ago.
What's his name?
I was taken.
Sorry, go ahead.
Which
Ryan.
One? I was taken out of the movie almost immediately watching the opening credits with it being that red with the white outline. But then the name Her Bananas showed up in the opening credits, and I was laughing for a good. Yeah, Her Bananas was like, no way. That guy wins the name game.
Oh, here he is. Chris Mulkey is his name, and he's in big stuff. He's in Captain. He was in that Captain Phillips movie. He was on a ton of TV shows. I like that guy a lot, but he doesn't do anything where he isn't required to be a huge dick. He was great in Boardwalk Empire. He's awesome. That guy's awesome. Anyway, it's just interesting to see where these guys went. A lot of these guys went nowhere.
He'll be in the new Twin Peaks as well.
Yeah, he's filming that right now, right? Yeah. Hank Jennings. I don't know who that will be. Who's Hank Jennings?
Oh, by the way, speaking of TV and Rambo, just this past week they announced that they're developing a TV series with Stallone on Rambo. So he's, from the early on rumors, it's going to be about him as a father.
Ugh. Right. Yeah, we talked about this on TMS. Or
it was on TMS.
Yeah.
And we were you and I were trying to determine, I can't remember how the conversation went. We were trying to determine how this works. Like what is happening? Is it the two of them are on the run? Is the son on the run and Rambo's safe? Like, I don't know where they go with that. It seems weird.
I hope it's more.
Oh my God,
like,
when you spilled your cereal, it reminded me of back in Vietnam when they spilled their cereal on me when I was in the cage.
I think it's going to be kind of a. I think it's going to be like a Grizzly Adams kind of thing. I think he's going to probably be like a survivalist in the woods somewhere, and his son's probably going to get in some kind of trouble, and there's going to be law trouble again. I think that's how I would.
So Taken, basically, it'll be Taken Rambo style.
Right.
It very well could be. That's an easy. I mean, what is Taken if not a? Cut from the same template, really.
Well, and that template
tarp.
Yeah,
that template is, I guess, in a broad sense, revenge movies.
Yeah, which I'm a fan of. It turns out I didn't really know it, but I notice I watch a lot of revenge movies. I like that.
It's this film doesn't fall into the most common definition of revenge films, because. He's already hurt, and he's hurting the entire time, and he doesn't really have anyone to take revenge on. Maybe Uncle Sam. You might notice that Richard Crenna's character's first name was Sam.
Yeah.
You know, but he doesn't actually get any revenge on Uncle Sam at all. He's just like all the killing that Rambo does is over his shoulder while he's trying to get away. Right. He sets traps and stuff. But it's not like he's taking any sort of glee in other people dying, that he, you know, that he needs them to die in order to get his revenge.
Yeah.
Who's your favorite revenge film actor?
Actor?
I can go ahead and tell. I can go ahead and tell you who mine is.
Okay.
Mel Gibson.
In what?
Everything.
From Mad
he does.
Max. Mm-hmm. From everything. From Mad Max to Payback.
Yeah.
All that
the
stuff.
The Patriot.
Payback is so good. I forget how much I love Payback sometimes.
Right. Payback is the quintessential revenge movie.
It's
like
really good.
It follows every beat that a revenge movie has.
Yeah. It's really good. I just read this. So I've been reading these. I shouldn't call them cheap because I don't mean to diminish their quality, because they're not. They're really pulpy and great. But these pulpy books, they're like $3 on Amazon. They're written by this guy. They're Westerns. It's called the Edge series. And it's all about this character named Edge. There's actually a show being developed on Amazon Prime called Edge, and they have a pilot out for it now that I'm not too sure about, because I don't know if they have the right tone. But anyway, I've really enjoyed the books, and they're super spaghetti Western, and they're all very hardcore revenge tales about this character getting revenge, initially for the death of his brother and then later on other stuff. But it's so good that it's the makings of the perfect revenge thing. And then this pilot comes out, and it's just kind of not great. It's okay. It's got that kid. It's got one of the True Blood people in it.
Oh.
I know, right? What's his name? Jason Stackhouse. That's the guy.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
He plays a bad guy in it. He's fine, I guess, whatever. But it's just, I don't know. I don't know if they have the right tone. But anyway, if you were going to ask me my favorite version of revenge stuff lately, it's totally these Edge books. I'm loving them.
Right.
And they're short and they're fun. And they're just, I feel like I'm reading the kind of entertainment that people used to get in like the early 60s when they'd buy like dime store novels or something. It's really fun to get into.
So there's can't possibly be an answer better than Bruce Willis. Mel Gibson. Mel Gibson, However, in his way and in his time, Clint Eastwood sure could make a revenge movie.
Oh, yeah.
That's a true story.
I mean, Dirty Harry was all revenge movies, weren't they?
Just pretty much everything he made. Like, all the way into these old man revenge movies.
Gran Torino is great because it's a little bit of revenge and a little bit of maybe getting past it as well. Hmm. It's kind of interesting.
A little resolution.
Maybe I'll follow us on Twitter if you aren't already, at FilmSec. I'm going to put up a poll where you get to suggest the names of actors who are your favorite revenge actors. I'd love to talk about that next week because I think that's an interesting thing.
Right. At the same time, it's so tedious. Mm-hmm. I mean, let's face it. This kind of thing, you're watching this movie going, I really want something new in here, mixed in here, please. Just a little something that's not straight up violence solves all things or doesn't solve all things, you know?
Well, in 82, though, this felt fresher, I guess, than it does now.
Oh, yeah.
Like now, sure, we've bled it for all it can bleed.
This was a very basic formula. That's the reason why I think that, to me, says that it kicked off a lot of other films, films.
And it was weirdly refreshing to see it in its raw form. Like, this is raw, uncooked revenge film, where they didn't quite know how to refine it or get more nuance in it. It is just by the numbers. And there was something kind of fun and innocent about that in a movie that is otherwise kind of violent and crazy. But here's the other thing I'll say. Violence-wise, this was really tame. Like, I don't think this movie's rated R today.
No.
Except for some of the language, maybe.
PG-13 tops. It was only one F-bomb, and the violence was not...
The blood and gore was pretty R-rated.
You think for today?
Yeah. For today's standards, maybe.
I don't know. I mean, I'm feeling like the movies, from what I've heard, the second one and third ones and the ones after that were way more violent, way more gory, and maybe, I don't know. That's just the perception. This one did seem tame.
Yeah.
Most way of tamer these, than I was expecting. The thing that I think would distinguish the gore and violence in this movie from something like Rambo 2 is most of the violence takes place at a medium to far shot. So most of the violence that happens to the cops is shot from a pretty good far distance off. So I think you get an idea of what's happening, but you're not seeing it to excess like you would in some of the later movies.
Yeah, I think that's a fair way to put it. I have a trope. How about this?
Oh.
Do all small hometowns have town-wide speaker systems?
That I immediately was
the little town I grew up in did.
Really?
Were there enough
for emergency stuff? Like, all right, everybody, batten down the hatches. There's a storm coming in.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah, there were enough speakers on this one public address system spread out all over town. They were used to, they were originally an air raid system.
Yeah.
And they were used to, test the fire department's siren every day at noon. And
every day we do it once a month,
every day at noon, man.
It's the beginning of the month, first Monday of the month, I believe.
What do they do that for? It's just to test it. That's it.
Make sure it works.
When I was little, make sure it works. And when I was little, it was a holdover from when you had that noon thing that everybody set their old clocks to.
Oh,
interesting.
Was this kind of like a Cold War thing?
I think so. It's definitely
more like a World War II thing.
Okay.
And then in a lot of places in Hawaii, you got speakers everywhere for the tsunami system.
Oh, right.
And they test those regularly, which is terrifying if you're walking along the beach.
But aren't those usually just like that kind of stuff?
Yes, exactly. Yeah. That's exactly right. Yeah. Good impersonation, Scott.
I've never actually heard it, but the idea that you could just be in the sheriff's office and Dennehy could grab a mic and go, "All right, everybody, get the hell out of town," or whatever, just
that
seemed weird to me.
That was stupid.
Right.
The whole thing is stupid. No town that size has that large a police force at all.
Yeah.
You know,
it's ridiculous. Man. A huge police force.
It was gigantic.
Growing up, my grandfather was the mayor of a town about the size of the one depicted here, and they had one policeman. One.
Right.
You would not have all
that. We've got two stoplights in our town, and we maybe have, three or four police officers. Now they have part-timers that'll come in, but nothing as big as this one. This place had huge. Plus the National Guard.
Right, getting to pull the National Guard that quickly or have a helicopter at a moment's notice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That all seemed disjointed from reality. What a town that's, it's described by Dennehy being that small and knowing that one guy walking across the freeway must be trouble. Like if you've got those kinds of eyes on the ground, things should be a little tighter, a little smaller, and a little less.
I just the first thing he says, "You go to place to eat around here." I'm like, okay, so now the sheriff's going to take him to the diner, and then we don't have a story.
Yep.
Right. Yeah. Exactly.
Just go out, talk to him, and then have him open up about his time in the war and how rough it was. Man, coming home was hard. People really gave me a hard time. This could have been a very different movie. It could have been Tuesdays at Maury's by the end of this thing.
There was get a visual trope.
Oh, really? I like those. Hold on. Visual trope. Here you go.
Boobies.
Boobies. Now, when I first started learning to drive as a young man, I actually almost wrecked because trying to imitate the visual look of how people drive in movies, and it's where they turn the steering wheel back and forth, and he did this in that truck, man. He was driving that army truck. It was just like, you know, like 90 degrees this way, then 90 degrees that way. You'd be all over the road. You'd be flipping it.
Yeah, but I don't think that would have gone so well.
That military truck. That truck, man, that was some thing, awesome. Man. He mowed through those police cars with that thing.
Right.
That was an awesome
Which,
scene.
And that made sense. But then he goes and just it seems like for no reason takes out a gas station. Like he's right. Scott Johnson playing Just Cause 3.
I was trying to figure. I was going through the dialogue when he was at the gas station. I was like, didn't somebody say that was didn't one of them say that he had a part-time job at the gas station or something like that? And I was trying to make it part of the revenge.
So now he's got something to do with gas station.
There's a gas station, that jerk that was trying to hurt me. I'm gonna blow it up.
Yeah.
I'm just thinking about the poor kid who works at that gas station, or the old lady who's getting her car repaired there, having it worked on over the weekend. Well, can we keep it overnight? Sure, no problem. We'll just keep in the bay, and it'll be fine overnight. No problem.
No issues.
My car.
Collateral damage rarely discussed in films like this.
Right.
Also, what is it called? This is a small thing, but it's in every movie, and for some reason, I kept being reminded of it last night. But what is it called when an actor is having a conflict with another actor? They're both standing there having this discussion, and after the point is made, the camera flips back to the other guy who's being told. There's a brief moment, and now we're in a new scene. Now, I've always, since I was ever seeing movies, it's always bugged me that we don't know how that conversation ends. Because it doesn't just end like that and go end scene and the lights go down.
Yes.
But that is kind of an old stage thing, isn't it? Where they would say, "You can't handle the truth," or whatever, and then the scene would go black, and then it would be people going, "Oh, brilliant, what great acting," or whatever. But what is that? Because that's a thing that does not happen in real life. They have to go, "Well, I guess that's it. Where's my keys?"
Right, there still has to be resolution in real.
It's
real
called
time.
It's called the last word.
Yeah, I guess so. But it's so convenient for filmmakers.
Cut. It's always a hard cut. Like, oh. Well, okay, and then the next day, birds are, you know, sun's out, birds
are... What you want is a split screen, where on one side of the screen it goes to whatever else it does, and on the other side you see the people you were just seeing, and now they're just eating pie.
Yeah.
They're just sitting together.
Walking down the path to get to their cars kind of awkwardly, because there's only one path down to the car, so they have to, in silence, kind of walk together, even though they just had this argument. Like all the things that life is.
Yeah.
There was nothing. I remember plenty of arguments with my parents I wish would end with a hard cut. Like lots of times where I was like,
"And end scene, Mom.
You're the worst."
Thank
and then
you.
Blip,
you did great.
Yeah. Next day at high school, like it doesn't work that way. Anyway, I don't even know what that's called. There's got to be a word for it because it's a technique and every movie uses it. And maybe it's so ubiquitous. Maybe it's so ubiquitous you don't need a name for it. I don't know.
Right. Hey, you know, this movie, since there's so much talk about gun control, and we have a gun, I wouldn't say expert, but maybe Randy knows a lot about guns. I wouldn't call him expert. But there was a couple of things with the handling of guns in this movie that made me question stuff. One of the things that how efficient is it to start a fire with a gun by shooting?
Ridiculous.
Right.
Ridiculous.
Shooting gunpowder.
Just watch just watch some Mythbusters.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Okay, they did a whole thing on blowing up a car by shooting it. And it was like, can't be done.
Impossible. And they would go all the way to try to, like, all right, let's dump gas everywhere. Let's have it go directly into a thinner tank. Let's do all these things, and it never would set the car on fire.
Right.
Yeah, I don't think anyone's suggesting go home and shoot your car and see what happens, but yeah, I don't think that stuff's, all movies do this though, right? They're all bad at this.
Right.
Yeah,
and it's kind of what we
also,
like.
I also want to know why more guns don't have suitcase handles on it, like
the M60. He pulls this M60 out of the back of that truck, and I'm just like, what? Yeah. I don't care if we're 30 years ago or 130 years ago. No military unit ever stores its biggest and most powerful weaponry within easy reach like that. Yeah. That's
just a zipper away from an M60. Yeah.
That is ridiculous. And that gun, man, he could like, it's kind of the whole climax of the film, the reveling, and he's got the gun now. He's wearing his lovely thrall bead garlands of ammo, and he just shoots a transformer with that thing. Mm-hmm. That's it. Yeah. That's like the climax of the film for me. And I'm just like, that whole climax is predicated on him just finding an M60. But and finding a ton of ammo.
Is there anything more sexy than watching Stallone have gun recoil with his muscles just flapping?
Right.
They really play that up later. Later on, they play that up in the future sequels are rife with that. I don't know if he does it so much now, because a lot of that skin's moving independently from the muscle it's attached to.
Smack in the face with the grip with his arm flaps.
All of the cops at some point end up with AR-15s or M16A1s, and I'm just I'm sorry. This little town doesn't have these fully automatic weapons. The M16s are fully automatic. For these little cops, these small little town cops are just cops. Man, they're blowing ammunition into the woods.
Yeah,
like what are they doing?
Was that the cops or was that the National Guard that you're talking about?
The cops. No, the cops.
It was both because they had the guard there earlier, who apparently are the biggest wimps in the world.
Right? They made the National Guard has to hate this movie. They paint them in a horrible light.
Yeah,
yeah.
Well, generally, I don't think. I don't think the military cops or the National Guard come off as well represented here at all.
Right. In this film. Unless you're Green Beret.
Yeah. If you're Green Beret, then you are a badass mother scratcher. Yeah.
There's one point where Dennehy has a little bit larger gun. It's a HK-93. I'm sure because the M16 looks a little small and it's like shot at night. And so he's holding this larger gun and he's hunting Rambo. And I'm just like, what is he doing with that? Like, it makes no sense. Why does he have this gun? Like I say, that it was for, I think, for artistic reasons, but the whole movie is like that. It just makes
the whole time I was watching, I was like, man, I wish Randy was here so he could, you know, bitch about the guns the whole time. It'd be so much fun. I would love to. Like, that's wrong.
There's a lot of guns in this movie. There's a ton.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
When Galt is shooting at him from the helicopter, he's got a Winchester 88.
Yeah.
Beautiful gun. Yeah. Absolutely stupid that he would be firing it from a helicopter.
Yeah.
Stupid.
Also,
I don't understand that.
Also, I love a cop who'll threaten the pilot that he'll kill him if he doesn't keep this thing straight.
Yeah,
that was to get the audience on Stallone's side to make this guy just, you know, he has no value at all. He is just the worst possible human ever. So it's okay if he dies.
Yeah.
Shoot
me.
Guess what? I can just turn the plane, the helicopter sideways a little bit and wee.
Yeah. Oops. Whoa.
That's a shame. Also, the part where Stallone's shaking his body and looking at him, what was that all about? Was that just.
That was awesome when he picks up his dead body and, you know, he's just. Why you do this to me? And it's like, I guess it was supposed to be like a scene like you would see on the battlefield.
Oh, right. Okay. Yeah. And also just that now he realizes that this is going to be pinned on him, even though he didn't do it.
Yeah.
Because at that point, he hadn't killed anybody. He had just been there and shown them all that he could, and that was it.
And that led me to the confusion, because I was like, did I miss it? Maybe I looked away or something. But when they shoot at him when he's down in the gorge, they shoot him. It looks like he grabs his head, but didn't he get winged in the arm? And wasn't that the first blood? Wasn't that the
That was clearly a flub. I don't understand why he grabbed his head. I think that there was actually some spray, like a squib goes off in front of him and gets some dirt in his eye.
Yeah,
that's the only explanation I had, and I felt that immediately when I saw the scene. I thought, oh, he got dirt in his eye.
Yeah.
And so then
when
they show his grazed arm, I'm like, okay, I see the story they're telling here, but it did not fit his reaction at all.
It never occurred to me that was first blood, quote unquote. Now that you say that, it makes sense. Now it makes sense because they fired first, so now all bets are off. He can do whatever he wants.
Boy, did they fire first.
Yeah.
They waste so much ammunition shooting at a guy who hasn't been armed and poses them very little threat.
So they have trained Rambo in all possible everything except for how to get a motorcycle up a slight incline.
that was fun. Hey, do all police cars in movies roll over? Is it just like it's a police car? I knew as soon as I saw that car, I was like, that car's going upside down, or it's going to flip off the back of a ramp or something.
Yeah, it's almost like they got a little kickstand underneath it pops so that it flips over for sure, no matter what.
Yeah, the Smokey and the Bandit model is what that one is.
Yeah, Smokey and the Bandit trope. That's a pretty good one. This episode of Film Sack is brought to you by Casper. We're excited to have them on the show. They are an online retailer of premium mattresses for a fraction of the cost. Don't go to any more warehouses or showrooms and lay on beds where some gross guy was there before and you didn't even know it. Eliminate that from your life. Their mattresses are obsessively engineered at a very fair price. You can try one easily. Buy it online, completely risk-free. You get 100 days. That's 100 days to try that mattress out. I did this. I liked it so much, I kept it. Get a Casper mattress for $500 for a twin, $950 for a king-size mattress. If you compare that to industry averages, that's extremely inexpensive. You can save an additional $50 as one of our audience members. Terms and conditions apply, so go to casper.com/terms to learn more about that by going to casper.com/filmsack and then enter the code filmsack. That's casper.com/filmsack and the code filmsack for $50 off. Thanks, Casper. I've got some clips if you guys want to hear them.
Yes.
Yeah.
Let's get to them.
It's going
to
be good.
Is it going to be a lot of gunfire? Because that's what this movie is filled with.
There's some, and then I have some questions about that gunfire, but we'll get to that in a minute. How about this? There's some subtle acting in the beginning, I thought. He was a little more subtle of an actor then.
Like I said, he's a friend. My name is John Rambo. We served on the same team together in NAMM. I don't know if you ever talked about me. I've got a picture of us together. Somewhere. It's junk in your pocket.
It's a nice subtle, you know, nervous John Rambo.
Yeah.
What I hated about that scene, well, okay, this explains it here.
That's me. That's Danforth and Westmore, Bronson, Ortega, and there's Delmar right in the back. You had to put him in the back because he's so big. If he didn't, he'd take up the whole picture. Look how big he is.
Delmar's gone.
What time will he be back?
He died.
All right, now. Mm-hmm. You could have told him 8 hours ago that he was dead.
let's just see. I'd like to see some of these photos. Yeah. Let me see the handwritten address and all that.
I hate that. Like, just tell him.
I actually liked it. It set up a whole thing for me. Like, she's black, he's white. She doesn't know from him. She doesn't know if he's trying to tell her a story, you know?
Yeah, maybe, like, I guess. I suppose that's true.
I actually thought that was the second best scene in the film.
I just know if it were me, I would have said, hold on, hold your breath. He passed away. He had cancer. Like, I would have just let him know before he talked a long time before she finally told him, is all I'm saying.
Well, it's the only chance he has to deliver some dialogue.
That's right. I know. It's true. And it did establish the important thing, which was under all of this veneer, there's this soft soul. You know, there's this guy who had real comrades and really, you know, he's got what it needs. He has what he needs to do to be as human as the rest of us. But then to find out the only other survivor of that team is dead now, probably from something he came into contact with in Vietnam, that sets him up for nothing matters anymore. And that's good. I agree with all that. I just think she let him go on way too long. It's like, let me just, you know, put your arm on his hand and say, listen, slow down there, Slick. He passed away, and not make him talk for 10 minutes. Yeah. Anyway. Here's one about, eat around here. Oh, he lost his Italian accent here.
You got someplace I can eat around here?
That doesn't even sound Italian.
Here? Right. Here?
It doesn't sound like him at all.
I like that.
It's Brooklyn Italian.
This movie is going to get compared to Rocky. This character is going to get compared to Rocky. And I really like that he had a somewhat different delivery.
Yeah, I do too. It also humanized him a bit in the beginning. Again, to establish the fact that he wasn't crazy until we made him that way. All right, Brian, I got a clip from Brian Ibbett when he was recently, though. This isn't a high school one.
OK.
Okay. This is a clip when Brian Hibbert recently went to a doctor's office and had to talk to his doctor. Dr. Glasscock, I believe is his name.
Yeah, that one, yeah.
And this is what the doctor said.
Now you put your hands in the car and you spread them.
All right, there you go.
That's exactly why he has a car in his office. I don't understand, but that's exactly.
No, he comes to you.
Yeah.
this is a house call. Driveway inspection of your body.
Yeah. Brian, the sad thing is, most of that clip is accurate, except for the car part.
Right.
Yeah. All right, here's, I just like this guy talking.
Come on, Leroy, sling that paint, boy.
Sling that paint, boy.
Come on, Leroy, I love that guy's
that
voice.
That guy's
though.
Got an amazing voice. Here's another one.
Hey, you got 3 seconds before I break your face in.
That guy's great.
He is. What is, who is that, and what's he from?
He's the dude that died in the helicopter, and I can't think of his name now. He's in a million westerns. Mm. Yeah, he's Galt.
All right, so that's Jack Starrett.
Yeah, he's great.
Okay.
He's in...
What am I thinking of? I'm thinking of Blazing Saddles.
Oh, yeah, he's in Blazing Saddles.
Oh, wait, yeah, that's right. I forgot. Yeah. I knew him somewhere.
Yeah, here he is.
Was he the sheriff in that?
No.
No, he was one of the Johnsons.
Yeah.
Everybody in town is named Johnson.
The sheriff was Slim Pickens, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, until the black guy got there, and then he became sheriff. Here he is again.
Who gives a shit?
Oh yeah, dude. Listen to that. Get deep into your brain.
Who gives a shit?
Right there.
Yeah. I want a Sam Elliott movie. Can we watch Roadhouse again?
Oh my gosh, you guys need to see the Good Dinosaur because Sam Elliott steals that movie. He's so good in it.
Thanks for the advice.
So good. That movie's great. This is a what the hell moment. I don't know what this is.
What the hell is...
Oh, yeah, I just like the way... What the hell?
What the hell is...
Almost had a rhythm to it.
That's rhythmic. It could be a remix.
Yep.
What the hell is...
Here is some manhunt small talk.
Didn't we go deer hunting up here last year?
Yeah, I got a couple bucks last year.
By the way, that entire everything ever in the mountains was all overdubbed. None of that was like live dialogue. Yeah, probably because the river's too loud or something. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it's outside too. Plus they're moving so much. I mean, it would be almost impossible to film all that. So much
stuff. Yeah.
I just want to say again, if you live in the lower mainland of British Columbia, you owe it to yourself to drive a whole 15 minutes out of Vancouver and go to that whole regional park area. It is beautiful. You can walk around on these rivers and trails and up into the mountains all you want. It's wide open. There's lots of these like dirt parking lots for you to pull off the road. Seriously.
Yeah.
Love that.
Sounds
place.
Awesome. Yeah. I love that.
And the whole movie's filmed there. There's not a single shot that isn't filmed around Golden Ears and Pitt Meadows.
Oh, really? That's cool. Well, where do they do it when they're in town? Where's that? Is that the Pitt Meadows?
It's actually a town called Hope. Hope, British Columbia.
Oh, wow.
Hope. Hope's, all hope is lost.
it was kind of smart because you can use some of the signage just, plainly.
Here's the death scream we like so much. There you go.
Who gives a shit?
Yeah, that guy's dead now. Here's another one.
Just nailed this sucker's ass. He can't be far.
Oh yeah, who was this guy? Was he? What was his deal? The guy with the dogs. He was just a towns guy. Was he working with the?
Yeah,
the dog handler.
He's a trope in himself. The dog handler's a trope. He's always some old guy that just, just really doesn't care.
Yeah, he works for the cops sometimes. They need his dogs.
Yeah,
and then he's all sad when they kill his dog.
No one kills my girls or whatever he said.
Right.
Yeah. That's great.
Boy, Rambo does is actually the response.
That is his one.
Man, Rambo kills dogs.
Rambo's a machine. He's a killing machine.
Here's
a
longer
coffee maker.
Here's a longer the Rambo coffee maker. Here is a here's a longer clip.
I don't want Galt's body out here all night.
I'll do what I can. Listen, Will. You sure picked one hell of a guy to mess around with. Just came over the teletype a few minutes ago. John Rambo is a Vietnam vet. He's a Green Beret, Congressional Medal of Honor. Guy's a war hero.
Jesus, that freak! I knew there was something about that guy.
It doesn't even sound like Caruso. David Caruso.
Yeah, it's because he wasn't taking his glasses off and going, yeah.
I kept thinking that too. He was so young in this; it was weird.
He really was. Yeah,
he looked like
pipsqueak.
A little 20-something something.
Mm-hmm. You just want to know who he is.
Yeah.
Who are you?
I want to learn more.
Who are you? Wrong CSI.
Yeah.
I don't give a shit.
That's all right. It all blends together.
I sang the wrong Dan Hill song earlier, too. I thought it was great.
One of my best friends in high school was named Dan Hill, so it always throws me off when you guys say his name. Okay. Anyway, not the singer, but a guy named Dan Hill. Here's Caruso talking.
Green Beret. War hero. That's great.
That's great.
It's great. That's great. Game over, man. Game over. Great.
That's totally his role.
He is, yeah.
He's the Hudson of this. Oh, that's great. I love that they're all basically cut from the same cloth. Here's, what's this?
He and I were friends when your mama was still wiping your nose.
I was hoping he'd say ass.
I felt like it needed ass there. I felt like the situation required
some ass.
Yeah, I need a little bit of just a dash of ass. That's what it needed.
Right.
Here's some sweet drama.
Now he's dead. He's dead because of that psycho out there. Now you listen, boy, and you listen to me good. I'm going to get that son of a bitch.
I'm telling you, that is some Shatner-esque business right there, man.
Kind of is.
Yeah, they did a lot of that. Him and Crenna were both pretty much from that school of that kind of acting in this. And I don't know why, direction or something. But
I think Crenna is a little better at it.
Yeah,
I mean, he had the easier role. But it just, I really liked Crenna's, Richard Crenna's delivery, the way he always looks on his face.
I like him generally. He's cool.
Yeah.
He died in 2002 at the age of 70 something. So no longer with us. This made me laugh.
Go get him.
Just that sound.
Go get him. Go get him.
That's the old guy. What?
That sounded like Adam Sandler. What was that? I'm trying to figure out what that scene was.
It was the old guy on the ground sending his second dog in.
So did. Who did it? Go get him!
It does sound like Adam Sandler. All right. Let it go sequence.
I could have killed them all. I could have killed you. Been telling you the law. Out here, it's me. Don't push it. Don't push it. I'll give you a war you won't believe. Let it go. Let it go.
There you go.
And so, right, I immediately paused the movie and YouTubed Rambo and Frozen, and I was not disappointed.
Really?
Has somebody already done it?
Oh, that's amazing.
Yes, I already done it.
Of course they have. Yeah. Is there anything someone hasn't already done anymore?
Oh, so true.
The only time I ever know that I've done something original, it ends up being spread all over the place. And that's when you know you've kind of done something before somebody else did. Otherwise, it's almost impossible. You get this great idea.
I was like, oh, I'm going to do a mashup. It's going to be awesome. I'm going to do it on the show. It's going to be funny. Ha, ha, ha.
You look it up. It's like, no, someone's done it already. I hate that. Mm-hmm. Oh, well, it's the internet. What are you going to do? Okay, this is my favorite use of this particular swear word. Okay? I don't know why, but it's the emphasis on hole, I believe, that did it for me. This is the guy with the state police, and he says this.
Assholes.
Holes.
With the emphasis on holes.
I love it. I think that's great. All right, here's the colonel.
I've come to get my boy.
Your boy?
I recruited him. I trained him. I commanded him in Vietnam for 3 years. I'd say that makes him mine.
Yeah, it's just...
I'd say it makes him yours.
Yeah,
okay.
You can have him.
You take him.
You got nobody else. So.
Yeah, why didn't they just say, you know what? Fine. You're... good.
Yeah, have him. He's fine. He's yours. Here's a great line from a Rambo movie, if there ever was one.
I didn't come here to rescue Rambo from you. I came here to rescue you from him.
Oh, wow. I think in 82, that sounded like original dialogue. Role.
Yeah, I'm sure it was a lot more original sounding 30 years ago.
Yeah.
Now it sounds so trite.
The minute he said,
now
I'm not
the
here to...
become the hunted.
Exactly. And when he said, I've not come here to... And as soon as he said even those first few words, I went, oh, I know exactly what the sentence is going to be, and I was right. So it's impossible. We've seen too many movies. You can't avoid it. Here's something about a billy goat.
To eat things and to make a billy goat puke.
All right, great.
I actually started making a list. I'm like, oh, what would make a billy goat puke? Let me add it up. Let's see. Maybe the hair off Stallone's back. I started trying to figure out things that might make
a billy goat puke.
I could,
Brian Dennehy's armpit. I can't think of anything else. David
those
Caruso's
little, those
sweaty
little
hair.
Rain caps on the hats.
Yeah, that'd be bad.
a goat puking has got to be the cutest throw up you've ever seen. goats do everything cute.
They kind of do. Well, when they're little. When they're older, they don't.
Yeah.
I don't think they're so cute. All right. Is this a saying? Is what I wrote here. This is a final clip, by the way. Is this a saying?
It's like bringing the pigeons to the cat.
like bringing the pitches to the cat.
No, I've never heard that. That's not a saying.
I don't know what that is. That was really weird to me. But anyway, that's your clips. And this is your film sack checklist. Dennehy going all Shatner, check. Zero women, check. I forgot about the lady at the top when I wrote this. When are all the other where are all the other kinds of law enforcement? Check. We got a Star Trek connection. Few of them actually. Michael Westmore, makeup creator. He was the makeup designer, makeup artist, makeup supervisor of all Star Trek spinoffs set in the Prime Universe. What does that mean? The Prime Universe.
Prime.
The original Prime series universe.
The original. Right.
Oh.
Well, yeah. The original universe before the most recent one.
The Picard stuff. Right. Right? Oh, right. I thought it was like the pre Next Generation stuff. So like generations and before.
No. The pre J.J. Abrams.
Gotcha.
Okay. Oh, okay. Is that that's what we're the calling that now? Line. The Prime Universe.
Prime.
Okay.
Universe Prime.
That's fine.
Yay!
Oh, because then it split off into a new timeline because Spock and his red matter and all that crap.
Right? Dang it, Spock.
I know, damn it. John took
Westmore out of a job, Spock. Hey, nice job.
The only good part, there's no really good reason for Leonard Nimoy to pass away and we all miss him. Like, we all don't think that he should ever be dead. But the only good side of that is we will get no more Star Trek movies where they try to force a cameo with him in it.
No, but they've got a bunch of other actors they can do that with.
Oh, who, though?
Well, they haven't even touched. Yeah, exactly. Shatner,
Takei.
Then they can start working on the Next Generation, folks.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Don't tell me these things because now you're worrying me. I hate that's part of it. They don't need to do that. It drives me crazy.
I rather like it. I
think it's
see...
fan service for fan service sake. I don't think you need to do it.
You know that Patrick Stewart deserves to be in more movies.
All right. I'll say this. The first movie, the way they did it with Spock, that I actually think it was needed for where the story went. The second one, wedging him in there, was just a wedge in. Like, they didn't need it at all. They had nothing to do with the storyline. It was just, here he is. Check him out again. Hey, everybody, check it out. It's Leonard Nimoy. What do you think? Just fan service. I don't like that. All right.
Servicing the fans.
I heard a rumor. I hope it's not true, but I heard a rumor that Chewbacca does another Tarzan yell in the new movie.
Oh, really? That makes me sad. Don't tell me stuff like
I hope
that.
It's not true. And how would anyone know is my question. Right. But I read it on Reddit, and as you know, Reddit, source for...
Totally believable.
Yeah, they'd never do anything weird over there. Also, John McClane, he was Orville. He played in TNG Fento in the episode The Watchers Who Watch or The Watches Who Watches The Watchers. Sorry.
Okay.
Not John McClane.
No.
But John McClane.
McLeam, I think is how you say it.
McLeam. Okay.
Jerry Goldsmith did the music. He wrote the musical score for all the Star Trek stuff, TNG, Voyager, all that, including the original theme in the first movie. And then Bruce Greenwood played Guardsman number 5. He was Chris Pike in the Star Trek Into Darkness movies. I love that guy.
I didn't recognize him.
He's also the voice of Batman in most of the Batman cartoons that aren't Kevin Conroy. Mm-hmm. And does a really good job. He's a fine Batman, Bruce Greenwood is.
And I don't understand what he's doing there.
Yeah. Well, he was probably... His career hadn't done anything yet.
Just taking any role?
Yeah, probably. It's probably that stage, you know? We all have those. Like Stallone's first movie, which was like some softcore porno thing or whatever it was, right?
All right, so have we gotten to the point where we can talk about Dan Hill ruining this movie?
Not before I tell you that the soundtrack grade, I'd give it a TV for very TV sounding. All right, after that, now what?
So this movie culminates. This movie culminates in The Point. And you're kind of told what the point is throughout the film, but you don't really get it until finally Stallone gets to deliver his big soliloquy about what happened to him in Vietnam and why he's a broken man and how he can't ever come back from that. You know, like war is hell, blah blah blah. And he screams and he ends up crying in Richard Crenna's arms and so forth. And then that's that. He's gotten it out. We all understand what the problem is. There's nothing more to do with it. So they put an overcoat on him and they march him out of this building into custody, and he's given up. He's finally given up. He's not fighting this war anymore.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
There's music playing at that moment. It's orchestral. It fits. It's been playing the whole movie. It's in the same song, the same key, blah, blah, blah. And then they freeze frame on Sylvester Stallone's face. Why not? It's the early 80s. You should do that. And a god-awful song starts playing.
Here you go.
It's a long road when you're on your own.
Oof.
This is that any different than Star Trek? Right, exactly. Exactly that.
Yes, it is different. From there the Star Trek song you're talking about is 100 times better than this. Mm-hmm. This sounds like it was written by Dan Hill while he was recording it.
Yeah.
Like they started playing some song and he started making up words as he's going along.
Yeah. I like he's that watching Brian the movie. We've been a long road shooting from here to there.
It has the lyric "I'll tell ya."
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Seriously, the lyric "I tell ya" is in this song. It's so bad. It almost ruined the whole film for me.
Mm.
Really.
It was a different songwriting style for a little while. Like, it was popular. Guys, mainstream.
I don't want to ruin our lives here, but this just in. Beep, 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 beep. I just uncovered 4 additional sound clips I didn't know I had.
Oh, awesome. Wow. Bonus clips.
Here's this one.
It's over. Nothing is over. Nothing.
Oh, yeah. I was wondering why we didn't have anything from the...
Please play that on the very end of all your podcasts from now on.
Yeah. I might. That's
you don't
not
watch
a bad idea.
Anything from Rambo except for the very end.
That's not a bad idea. Here's Dennehy making a sound. Okay, there's that. Here's this.
Jerkwater, USA.
All right, there's that. It's my favorite town.
Jerkwater, USA.
Okay, and then there's this is what Hillary's first choice for vice president said when she was running for president. She's still running, but this is what her first choice said, so she had to move on to somebody else.
Screw that, Clinton. I ain't going up there.
Here you go. And that's it. Oh, and then bad gun sounds. The gun sounds in this movie were terrible.
We stole this from the A-Team.
It's terrible.
Yeah.
Not good.
It's terrible.
That's the one place we're way better at now in our movie making is that. All right. Those are your missing clips. Oh, and just handed to me. It's the alternate titles.
The cheddar.
It's the cheddar, everyone. Oh, wait. I got to do you guys first. Hey, let's do the Twitter post. In 140 characters or less, let's sum up this movie only the way you know how. Let's start with Randy.
First Blood. Sylvester Stallone's John Rambo character gets his criminal start by throwing a rock at a helicopter and killing a man. Are you kidding me? How was it not called Rockman versus Helicopter?
Rockman.
Oh, I would like that. Rockman versus Helicopter.
Yeah.
Helicopter.
Then they have to send in Troutman to help talk him down.
We just modernized your movie. You are welcome.
You're welcome. Dunaway.
First Blood, like keeping a knife in your smelly vagrant butt crack. No one wants to touch your crack knife, Rambo. Why is he touching your knife, Rambo?
Your crack knife.
That crack knife, man, that still bothers me. I'm like, don't be putting that in his face. He's had that in his crack all day. You just said he was a smelly vagrant.
That is how you get pink eye.
Yeah.
Mm. That is exactly how you get pink eye.
You get everything wrong. Finally, Brian Ibbett.
First Blood. The only thing missing from this movie is Ron Burgundy saying, "Well, that escalated quickly."
I thought the same thing because I mean it happens fast.
Yeah. When it really does.
They get right to
it. Hold on, Brian Ibbett. I'm Ron Burgundy.
What?
Iron Burgundy? Iron Burgundy? What?
What?
That's
what?
My favorite quote from that movie is when he says, "I'm Ron Burgundy."
Oh. I still need to see that movie.
Yes, you do.
You haven't seen it?
No, no. It's like Rambo with Brian Ibbett. I've never seen it.
Yeah, there you go. See? Everybody's got their thing, people.
It is my Rambo.
I don't think that's the same.
I kind of want to sack Anchorman. Can we sack Anchorman?
I don't think it's sackable. Comedies are hard for us.
We could certainly spend an hour and a half just playing quotes.
Yeah, that's true.
Right, it'll be all clips.
All clips.
Not going to say anything. We're just going to run the audio.
It'd be all the catchphrases everyone already knows, though. It'd be weird. I don't know if that movie would work. But I can tell you the alternate titles for this film were Small Town Cops Are Lame or Someone's Feeling a Little Rambo-unctious. We got a phone call from somebody. He lives in South Carolina, and he would like to defend his home state because we were giving Brian a hard time about where he is from.
That's right.
So here it is.
Hey, y'all. This film set. We down here, I'd like to give a shout-out, Brian. I live down here, South Carolina, Out down Somerville way, and I just want to let y'all know y'all cut Brian some slack, man. We doing it big down here. All right, then let's show y'all. Y'all be good now.
Boomhauer, Always good to hear from.
Fantastic. I do know where that's at. That's not that far from here, so that's good. Really? I appreciate always the natives from South Carolina. I love these guys.
It's full of
assholes.
All right, great.
Great.
Also, Fletcher sent this.
God, I'm a handsome guy. Look at that.
Yeah, we agree. We completely agree. All right, that is it. Next movie is, oh, by the way, if you want to send your own calls in, 801-471-0462, or you can email us, filmsack@gmail.com. What is our next film? I don't even know. I don't even know. Do we know?
I don't even care.
Man, you always catch me by surprise.
I know. I do this. I meant to check it.
He asked him. He asked it every.
Wait, give it again. What?
Oh, that's right.
No holds barred.
That's right.
No holds barred.
And I don't know for sure, but I'm guessing in this film, there you will not see any holds being barred.
Yeah.
Or any barred. Yeah.
That's right.
Okay. This is.
I don't even know. This is this term. I've never even heard of this movie.
It is. It's a Hulk Hogan thing, right?
So, okay, so the reason this is on our list is because if you watched any sort of pro wrestling in the 80s, you were advertised this movie. This movie was like the long-awaited Hulk Hogan is a film star movie. And, of course, I don't think any of us have ever seen it.
I haven't either.
We all wanted our wrestlers to go on to movie careers. Fortunately, Dwayne Johnson finally did it with The Rock. But yeah,
finally did it right.
Unfortunately, Hulk Hogan did not. Now, this is not our first viewing with Kurt Fuller. Wasn't he also in Idiocracy?
Kurt Fuller. Fuller. That name's so familiar, but I'm not sure it's the movie you're thinking of. Hold on. Kurt Fuller. Oh, yeah, he is in that. He's in many things. He's in Running Man. He's in lots of things we've seen. Ghostbusters 2.
Right. Did we see Ghostbusters 2?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Don't you remember that shitty pile of shit?
Yeah.
Did we see that?
Vico, why is there drippings in my eye?
Yeah.
Why am I covered with drippings?
That movie,
he was also in Ready to Rumble, which I thought every time you say no holds barred, I always think that's what you're talking about, Ready to Rumble. Have you guys seen that one?
No.
Mm.
Oh, yeah. You need to see that. It's got David Arquette. And that was the one I think where he steals a drink from a store, and he does it by I think this is the same movie. It's the one where he basically sticks his fingers down his butt crack and makes it really smell bad, and then he takes the drink to the counter. One of my favorite stupid scenes.
Oh god,
that sounds awful.
And he says, something's wrong with this. Smell it.
Is it Road Trip?
Is it Road Trip? I don't know.
No, that's a different. That's Horatio Sands does that to DJ Qualls.
Ugh.
No.
If you were a boy of a certain age in a certain age, no holds barred was this thing. You couldn't, in the English speaking world, you couldn't watch television aimed at 12-year-old boys and not get advertised this movie.
Yeah.
I am really excited, and I'm terrified that it's going to be
awful. We're going to watch it. Also, our buddy William Dills Gregory recommended this one as well, and we're taking him up on that. So we're going to give it a shot. By the way, DJ Quayle's great. In Man on the
High Castle.
Isn't he great in that?
Not
the kind of role you're used to seeing from him.
No, for sure.
Everybody's like that in that show.
It's still
like
a little scrawny guy, though.
Oh, yeah. No, he needs to be that kind of weird, skinny, scrawny guy. How far are you, by the way?
It's 4 or 5 episodes in. I had to watch Gotham. I got to keep up with Gotham.
Yeah, you got
to. So I had to jump in with a little Gotham.
There's a Man on the High Castle you need to visit. All right. I think that's everything for us, gents. We will do that movie next week. Very much looking forward to it. I don't know why I ever said gents. I hate that term, and I regret saying it.
You jerk. It's
short for Gentiles, right?
How dare you speak so nicely to us?
I know. It just feels like something my grandpa would have said. I don't know why I said gents.
All right, gents, load up. Play
gents.
A little poker.
We're taking off. Filmsack.com is the website. Voicemails, again, can be sent to 801-471-0462. You can also email us, filmsack@gmail.com. We're on Twitter @filmsack. Leave us reviews on Stitcher, iTunes, or wherever you get your podcasts. That's going to do it for us, for me, for Brian, and for Randy. throwing up goat. We'll see you next time.
Now it's over.
Sling that thing.
It's never over.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.
Wow. That was fun. Yes.